The killer is the assemblage of formations conventionally called a being containing the aforementioned formation's volition of killing. As we know, no killer, no being, just various sankhara dharmas. That which is killed, in inverted commas, by him is the aggregation of material and immaterial dharmas that would have been capable of arising in continued succession if the aforementioned means killing had not been applied, but which now continues as a bare procession of material dharmas conventionally termed the dead. Now, we know that actually the chuticitta is just conditioned by past karma.
The same karma as patisandhi.
So when it says that which is killed by him, the khandhas, the nama and rupa dharmas that would have arisen without the killing, what does this mean? Because the cause of the chuticitta is one's own karma. So why does it refer to it in this
way? And what will condition next life?
Will be one's own karma. So it's always one's own
karma.
Can
it be healing?
Yes, the intention to kill and the killing itself, the harming of the other. But, for example, let's say I have the intention to kill, or conventionally we say I kill the mosquito now. This is how we speak conventionally. So yes, the karma involved will bring its own result. But actually, we think that I have killed the mosquito, but in fact, the cause of the death in the mosquito, its chuticitta, is a result of its own past karma. So what does it mean in terms of paramattha dharmas when it says that that which would have arisen if...
That is karma, the intention to kill.
The intention to kill, yes. But actually the death which seems to follow the death of the mosquito is not the result of my deed at all, but the way it reads here, it makes it sound as though it is, but this is, I think, just conventionally speaking. So even when one reads the commentary detail,
it depends how it is.
When you're talking about vipaka, seeing, hearing and all that, it's not just karma, but there's also upanisya pachaya for causing the result,
many,
not just karma.
Pancha, yeah,
many,
two conditions.
So maybe that's just upanisya
pachaya. But the actual cause... The actual cause is always
the
karma.
Yeah,
it's always the karma, one's own karma.
But also other conditions, as openness
of. Well, of course there have to be, but the real cause is karma.
Yes.
Are you saying this is not quite right?
Let's just keep it very simple. Let's just say the cause of death is karma, and so even though there is the intention to kill and the striking, which is akusala kammapata that will bring results, in fact, it's a wrong view that thinks that is the cause of death of the being, because the cause of the death of that being is its own karma.
What about that person died without killing?
Then still...
You can understand that?
Yeah, easy.
So this is the same?
The same. So it's exactly the same. So the cause of death is always karma, regardless of what the other person did or whatever, regardless of the floods or...
So I get a hammer or whatever, and there's a mosquito, and I squash the mosquito.
It's your own karma.
Yeah, but presumably that mosquito may have lived a bit longer if I hadn't done that, right?
Or it's time to die without being hit.
Depends on
or not, though, right? So there must be some relationship, I'm assuming. It's cutting it short, isn't it? That's what it's saying here.
Whose karma hitting it?
Mine.
So it will produce results.
Yes.
But that one died anyway.
But not at that time, maybe.
By its karma.
It couldn't die if it didn't have the appropriate karma to die.
But it seems to be saying here that you are cutting it short in the commentary, right?
That which is killed is the nama and rupa khandhas, the dharmas, that would have been capable of arising if the killing had not been applied. So here it's suggesting that the namas and rupas of the mosquito would have arisen if there hadn't been my intention, the intention.
How do you know that?
That's what the commentary
because the commentary says.
Is that the Buddha Ghosa or is that the sub-commentary?
This is the sub-commentary. So it's
the Tika.
Yeah.
Tika to the Brahma Jala Sutta.
Yeah. Yeah, what about other flies or mosquitoes?
They keep
living. No, they died.
They died soon.
Being killed.
Or maybe we shouldn't be assuming what would have happened or not happened. If it's happened, then we know that it's because of that person's own karma, and that's it. And not assume that if somebody didn't kill, it would not have happened. It's happened because of karma.
Yeah, that's it. But it's just an example about whatever one reads, whatever detailed commentary or sub-commentary.
I'm still not sure that it's wrong, though.
It's not wrong, but one has to know whether one is talking conventionally or it depends how it's understood. Because one knows the condition of death is karma, not the other's act of killing. Hurting.
Well, except as Sir Kim explained, there's many other conditions necessary to support that vipaka to arise, right?
Okay, let me put that as a question then. For that mosquito, or the khandas we call the mosquito, to die, we can say the chuti-chita is conditioned by past karma, and that past karma has to have supporting conditions. There has to be upanisya pachya. Included in that upanisya pachya, can we refer to the deeds of the other person that swatted it?
Do you think that the death consciousness can arise without karma as condition?
No, that's all.
What about when karma expires? The karma to keep someone alive expires.
How come death consciousness? By accident or what?
No, never by accident.
It's a result.
But those other factors, for example, the
many factors conventionally, conventional factors.
So conventionally, we can say, besides karma, the flood in Thailand, or the hitting, or the car accident, or all these other things conventionally. But in terms of actual paramattha dharma causes, the only cause of death is karma and upanisya pachya. And if we're talking about the upanisya pachya, then upanisya pachya is not the act of another person or the flood, it is the previous.
What is meant by upanisya pachya?
The decisive support.
Which means?
Which means other accumulations, past accumulations.
Any reality.
Right. Realities only.
Even intention to kill is pakatu upanisya pachya as well, not only karma pachya.
So past lobha dosa, intention to kill, thinking, memory, but when we talk about the other person's act or the flood, this is just an idea, isn't it? It's not upanisya pachya.
Yeah, but what I was referring to was there must be some dharma, which is upanisya pachya. I wasn't referring to the deed. And I was wondering whether there was some dharma, which was upanisya pachya.
Can we say that all dharmas are pakatu upanisya?
And maybe this idea about cutting short is from the standpoint of the person who committed the deed, that he has the intention of cutting short.
Yeah.
Are we trying to understand the conventional dharma, not the absolute reality?
Both.
Both? At the same time?
Mm. It could never be understood through conventional, like when one has an idea of another person killing or a flood, one can never understand anything to do with karma and chuti. So even support condition, like the experiencing of hardness, or the thinking about hardness can be support condition, but that has nothing to do with another person or floods, because these are just ideas, aren't they? So at the moment of being hit, there is the experiencing of hardness, but again, it's a result of karma. Question about kalapas as object of understanding, because now we talk about kalapas of rupas, groups of rupas arising together. So we're talking about a concept about realities arising together. But is kalapa always a concept, or is kalapa, when it's referred to as an object of insight?
What do you mean by kalapa?
By kalapa, I mean a group of rupas that arises together, so we know that there are always...
Inseparable.
Inseparable, always at least eight rupas in a group, in a kalapa. But it seems that kalapa itself, the word kalapa, is always a concept.
No.
So
we have to use the word in order to understand that. Otherwise, how can we talk about the eight rupas in a kalapa?
Right. So we know...
It's not just the word, it's the idea of kalapa itself.
If we don't use kalapa, but there they are.
Yes.
So how can we understand what we mean?
Yes, they are, and I'm wondering, I mean, I've not thought about it, but I'm wondering that we know rupa and we know nama, and where does kalapa fit in? What is kalapa?
Is there any taste or flavor?
Yes, taste is a reality.
So, where is it?
Where is it also a concept? Where
no.
Is?
Where is it? Without the four primary rupas, can there be taste?
No.
So it's there.
Yes, it's conditioned by the four primary rupas.
No matter you call it what, but it's there.
So let's say at this moment, visible object is appearing through the eye sense, and we know that at the moment when visible object is appearing, it couldn't arise, it couldn't appear if it wasn't supported by the other rupas, including taste. So we know that certain rupas have to always arise to support another rupa, but at the moment of understanding, only visible object is seen. At the moment of tasting, only tasting is experience. So we understand theoretically that the other rupas have to arise together, but this is just thinking.
But why do we talk about the four primary rupas, not only 28 rupas? No mentioning about primary rupas. But since the other rupas besides the four depend on the four
primary. So we know there have to be the primaries to condition the others. So when there is understanding of a rupa, whether it's a primary or derived rupa, we know they depend on each other and have to appear. But we can understand theoretically that they must arise together.
Because we are not Buddha.
You're right. So what does it mean to actually directly understand kalapa?
Not together. Impossible, just one at a time.
So actually kalapa is always
from one by one, you know that they are there together.
So when it refers to understanding of kalapa, this is what is meant by understanding one by one,
right.
So one realizes they must arise together.
So probably this kalapa comes from the understanding of the nature of a rupa and the fact that it's conditioned by at least seven other rupas. So it's the understanding of
seven
this.
Seven or four?
Four plus the three. I mean, it's conditioned by the four, and it is, conditioned by the four. And it is from this understanding that the understanding about kalapa is derived. So it's in that understanding. So the object is always a reality, and the understanding that it's conditioned.
For example, a tiny piece of meat, when you touch what appears, and when you taste from that particular very small piece, but when you taste, it's another rupa. The smell is a rupa, but they are all there.
So kalapa is actually the object of understanding. The idea, the reality of kalapa is the object
of
understanding.
They are real. And one by one, the object can be experienced, not all together.
What I understand is it's by the development of understanding of different rupas, one by one, over and over again, that it becomes apparent that they have to arise together. They have to be supported together. In the beginning, if there's just understanding of visible object or just understanding of sound, it's not apparent. But by being aware repeatedly of different rupas, then it becomes more and more apparent how they have to arise together. So that's what's meant by the understanding of kalapas. But it's only ever one rupa that appears. Something on karma and jhana cittas. We know that for someone who has attained jhanas, if the ability hasn't declined like Devadatta, then if the ability hasn't declined, there will be conditions just before death for those jhana cittas to arise and to bring their results in rupa or brahma planes. I've always wondered why the jhana cittas arise in those cases just before death. Can one just say, well, it's just by upanisya
patra, by conditions.
Just by conditions, mm-hmm. That's how it happens.
Just getting back to the topic we were discussing earlier, so can we say, does it seem
only in the sense that one needs background in hearing Dhamma, that's the only thing I would say. But without having heard Dhamma, there wouldn't be conditions, but other than that, no.
That's the only thing I would say.
But nevertheless, there's no chance of me going to the Ganges and holding my hand up in the air, because I just don't see that as having any usefulness.
Will you not be inclined to do it?
But I just don't believe that's one of the conditions for understanding. Whereas the guy who's doing that thinks he's on the path to enlightenment. I don't believe that. I think he's incorrect in his assumptions.
On the path to enlightenment.
But you could be playing tennis.
Yes. But if someone says to me, oh, I'm going to go to a 10-day Vipassana retreat and I'm going to concentrate on the breath for 3 days and then feel the sensations in the top of my head and concentrate there, and when I can feel the sensations there, I'm going to go up and down the body. If someone tells me that, I will say, I don't think you understand what understanding is.
If
someone says, what do you think I want to do?
Then I would not discourage.
Do a Vipassana retreat for 10 days.
If someone says, what do you think I want to go and think
But if someone said today I'm going to study Abhidharma, what do you think of that, Rob? I would say, yeah.
One thing, but with the idea of to develop understanding, I think that's
good. Study Abhidharma.
Memorize the Patana and Pali because I think that one really has to understand Pali in order to understand teaching.
I wouldn't feel that as bad as say I'm going to do a 10-day Vipassana retreat.
Person A comes up to you and says, I'm going away to the forest for a year to go on a meditation retreat. And person B comes to you and says, I'm going to Burma for a year because I'm going to memorize the Patana in Pali. What is your response to these two people?
What made you think that you can get knowledge by going? What about reality right now? If there is no understanding right now,
don't you think some people are not ready to understand the moment anyway, so learning the Patana may be a condition for future understanding to grow? But if they're not ready to understand that,
okay. What Patana now? If there is no understanding of reality, which are nama and rupa, how can you understand patthana now? Because patthana is not in the book, it's just right now. So if there is no understanding of any reality right now, it's impossible to just read and gain the knowledge of patthana from reading. For example, ayatana, okay? Where is it? What about now? No understanding of the reality of ayatana, but talking about the ayatana, in and out of ayatana. Where is it? Not now? It's now. If no one understands it's now, no one understands, no understanding of anything, no matter in the forest or anywhere. So it's not a matter of going somewhere or reading something, but it's the matter of understanding, developing understanding. Reality is not in the book, anytime, anywhere, and right now. When there's right understanding right now, it develops. So what's the object of right understanding? What's the object of vipassana? And what is the path leading to that point? Understanding the object, because now there's object appearing without any understanding. If panya does not develop,
someone coming here having a little bit of right understanding but no conditions to hear further, going away and then doing something else, meditating or whatever, but because of this initial right understanding at some point, just have understanding, even meditation retreat. On the other hand, someone who comes here and listens and listens and never had a moment of right understanding comes back because of various other reasons, attachment and wrong understanding.
Do you think the person
that understanding grew in the meditation retreat, do you think they'd keep going on their meditation retreats?
I doubt it. But it depends again on how much understanding and what the object is.
Keep going on their meditation retreats?
I doubt it. But it depends again on how much understanding.
Tanha is the condition for dukkha, right?
For example, what's the second truth?
Tanha is the
attachment. Why go away? At this moment there is seeing and this world object. How much there is understanding about this? Without the understanding develops, can there be the experiencing of the arising and falling away of reality? Because tanha is always there, like the space in between the kalapas. Through six doorways all the time. Even right now, we are talking about seeing and
seeing. But the
vitaka
is also ready
moves
to jump
away
in at any moment.
All the time,
so even when one is here or reading Abhidharma, it's already waiting in the background.
Also ready to jump in at any moment. So even when one is here or reading Abhidharma, it's already waiting in the background.
And understanding reality with right understanding about the difference between theoretical understanding and the direct awareness and understanding of reality right now.
When I was a little boy, and
no vision.
No.
What appears now? No vision. Oh,
I had a vision.
Any clinging to it?
Different vision.
No.
But it's their vision.
No clinging to
the past. Any clinging to it now?
No clinging to the past experience.
What about wondering what it was?
To the past
wondering
experience.
What it was is
attachment. What about wondering
attachment.
What it was?
Attachment.
Ivan, you always say it's fallen away.
Okay.
Fallen away.
Attachment. Ivan, you always say it's fallen away.
Object. Fallen away. And back to the kalapas. So we say now.
visible object is seen, or colour is seen, and we know that colour arises in each kalapa, so we can talk about the colour of the table, the colour of the rocks. Now, when we talk about what is seen as visible object, but when we talk about the colour of the rocks, we never talk about the visible object of the rock, just the colour of the rocks.
Why is this? When we talk about the colour of the rocks, we never talk about the visible object of the rock.
I see, that's all.
So what's the difference between visible object and color?
If someone has no,
it depends on what word you'd like to use.
Light. For example, my friend in a coma has no sensitivity to light, but there is some visible object seen. So is this like
sensitivity
in the dark, there is some visible object seen, but just like that?
Like,
and one can't even say it's
dark,
weaker seeing or anything.
It's
just what
just
is
like
seen, that's all, just like nothing else.
Mm-hmm. And one can't even say it's weaker seeing or anything. It's just what is seen, that's all, nothing else.